I keep trying to rein in this period of time as it threatens to take over the whole story like a wild vine climbing over forgotten fences. I lived in New Zealand for only 4 years after all. But each time I go to the fragments of memory, the details of friendships expand like the little crumbs of paper that Proust described being dropped into a porcelain bowl of water, which until then are without character or form, but the moment they become wet, stretch themselves and bend, take on colour and distinctive shape, become flowers or houses or people. His image exactly conveys what it feels like to me, the way a memory that has become reduced, small, folded, can, if the right moisture is applied, unfurl itself into ever-expanding scenes of the utmost intricacy. Time, too, concertinas outwards. It was a period of my life when so much happened, it felt like eons. I met Anthony, I had a baby, I started at university, I had a part-time job as a nude model for a group of artists, I lived in a commune and at least 5 different other houses. It felt eternal. We were eternal. But then I look back and find with astonishment that it was only a few years. I keep thinking of the autobiography of Alice B. Toklas, where Gertrude Stein says she and Picasso were chatting about various things that had happened, and one of them said, "But all that could not have happened in 1 year." "Oh," said the other, "my dear, you forget we were young then, and we did a great deal in a year." We did a great deal in a year too. Some of it was dangerous, and even though we were immortal, not everyone survived unscathed. Everyone, or at least everyone I knew, took drugs of various kinds in those days. Out of curiosity and a desire not to miss out on anything, I tried everything that came my way. There were always large amounts of marijuana, which I smoked most days, some hallucinogenic mushrooms, hash cookies often, coke once or twice, 6 acid trips, and a couple of times heroin. After the 2 hard drug experiences, both of them pleasurable, I knew not to have any more. I had no desire for annihilation, but it wasn't the same for Barbara. Or maybe that's unfair. Barbara probably didn't desire destruction either, but she liked living nearer the edge. Hello Sailor were starting to make a name for themselves in Auckland, and there was a buzz of excitement at their pub gigs. Barbara was sharing in the excitement and in the heroin that swirled in a kind of dark glamour around them. It was beginning to take hold of her. She wasn't just dabbling anymore. We visited each other. I went to her house mostly, and we talked about our men and about our other friends from the land. But we were slipping into different worlds. I started at university when my baby was 18 months old, enrolling in 16th century and 20th century literature, as well as psychology and educational philosophy. I had essays to write on Milton and Thomas Pynchon and Plato's approach to education. Barbara was going to gigs and scoring drugs and avoiding arrest, and working in a massage parlour. She had finished the massage course and got a job at the parlour, which was in a back street in Ponsonby, still a poor inner city area at that time. I wanted to believe Barbara was just giving therapeutic massages, but one day she told me about the men she massaged having hard-ons. "I give them a hand job," she said in a confiding and oddly pleased voice. "Just to finish, I feel sorry for them." I was disconcerted, but tried to hide it. Just as I had when Peter had naughtily said she liked La Dolce Vita when I was 12. "There's nothing wrong with that, is there?" Barbara asked in a slightly defensive tone, and I realised she did want my approval. "No, there's nothing wrong with it," I said, but I couldn't get rid of the image of Barbara's hand slipping up and down some sweaty middle-aged businessman's dick. It didn't fit with the image of the white goddess, surrounded by her books of herbal lore, her thoughtful gaze as she threw the I Ching, her veggie garden on the land, her bread baking in the ashes. One day when I visited, she showed me a short iron bar, where the hell had she got it, that she kept in her Indian patchwork shoulder bag. She laughed as she showed me, but with a disturbing, hard look in her eyes. She was doing some low-level dealing just to keep herself in drug money, but even at that level, there were dangerous people. I went home to Anthony. "I don't think I know how to be friends with someone who keeps an iron bar in her bag," I said. We were leaving anyway. I still wanted to be a writer and had found a university in Sydney where I could study. Anthony and I had talked about it for months and decided to move to Australia. I said goodbye to all the people from the land, to Barbara, whom I now knew to be an addict. With Anthony and our 2-year-old, I left for Sydney.